and welcome to another episode of Top of the Ops, brought to you by the Drawdown's editorial team. My name is John Whittaker. I'm the editor of the Drawdown, and joining me today, as usual, are the Sutton and Shearer of PE Operations Journalism, Sylvia Sicardi.
Well, hello there.
And Matthias Plott.
Hello, John. I have to be honest, I do not get that reference.
Yeah, okay, so today's comparison was intentionally indecipherable for both of you. It's a reference to 90s English football, so, I mean, you were never going to get it. But you can trust me, that is most definitely a compliment, particularly coming from a Blackburn Rovers fan.
That's so weird, John.
I understand even less after that than I did before.
Okay, we're going to move swiftly on to the topic of today's podcast, which is discussing talent attraction and retention in mid-market private equity. The cover story for the Drawdown in April 2024 was an article written by myself about this topic, where I suggested that though PE's offer to younger generations continues to look attractive on the surface, its pipeline of talent may be facing future blockages. The promise of carried interest continues to obviously be a major enticement, but there has been a trend of firms offering this to employees at a more junior level, which speaks to at least a certain paranoia of attracting young people into the industry. But lots of people that I spoke to for this article highlighted that actually there are other career motivations which are as crucial, if not more crucial, than pay to younger generations. Now, wouldn't class myself as a member of a younger generation anymore, but the two of you probably would describe yourself as such. And you definitely can't remember Blackburn Rovers winning the Premier League in 1995. So I wanted to ask both of you what you see from your point of view as the most important factors for you when you've been choosing your career and choosing your job so far in your career.
Yeah, so I think it's difficult to talk for an entire generation, but I'm going to make some sweeping generalizations anyway, based off talking to friends and my own experience. I think these days people are looking for more of a two-way relationship between company and employee. And I think that can mean a few things. Primarily, people want career progression. By that, I mean, it's nice when there are obvious senior roles to move into. If you work in maybe a smaller company, it's particularly attractive if there's sort of a training program to help you upskill, and generally having valuable experiences in the role, having opportunities to try new things, being able to push yourself and your skills further. The only thing I would add is that there's probably a myth that us Gen Zers are lazy. I think I would probably say that the attitude to work has changed. I think people want to work smarter, not harder. And I think that's okay.
Sure. Matthias, would you echo those thoughts from Sylvian?
I would definitely echo those thoughts, both as someone who's kind of made a career change early on. I am an educated lawyer and I did practice for a while and then became a journalist. So I would echo that from my side. In terms of younger people in private equity, I actually wrote a feature towards the end of last year, precisely around incentivizing them, not so much focused on the carry side, but one trend that I saw both from younger people, but also from the managers that hire them, is there's a large ideological motivation behind why they work. And I would say I would count myself to that as well. Part of why I wanted to become a journalist is because I'm intrinsically ideologically motivated. And I think for those young people in private equity, a large part around the motivation was they can live out and contribute to those ideologies through their actual hands-on work. The hands-on work is a manifestation of what they believe in. And I think that is a very big part where private equity firms can position themselves. It is a lucrative career. We all know that. Great. But it's more sort of, what do you actually get to contribute and actually get to do through your day-to-day work? That was a large driver behind those people that I spoke to and why they joined the industry.
Yeah, and our interviewee for this episode is Kerry Heaton, who's the Chief People Officer at HG. And I also spoke to her for the cover feature as well. And, you know, her views chime with those of both of you in that those ideas around culture and purpose and career progression are just as important as pay when people are choosing careers and jobs. So we're going to hear a little bit of a conversation Kerry and I had where he explores some of those issues and also talk around the necessity around the apprenticeship model in PE and how that's having an impact on younger generations. So you may notice that I sound a little more sonorous than usual in this recording. That's because it was recorded the day before I lost my voice. So apologies for the slightly strange sounds that I'm making. But here's the interview with Kerry. I am delighted to be speaking to Kerry Heaton of HG. In our discussion previously, Kerry, you highlighted that you thought that actually culture was the most crucial aspect when you're trying to attract and retain talent within a PE firm. I'm just hoping you could maybe elaborate on that a little bit and maybe say how you think PE is evolving to meet the changing expectations of more junior staff members.
Yeah, thanks, John. So I do think culture is the most important piece. I think there's been lots of research around why people work and what, you know, where they get their value. I know money is important, and certainly within private equity is a really critical part of the overall proposition. But actually, the environment that you work in, the way people communicate with each other, the way people treat each other, the kind of learning and development opportunities that you get and the opportunities to grow your career, I think have always been important and are becoming more and more important. So I think and that's how I would kind of capture culture of an organization. And often it's not written down. It's just, you know, you companies have a really strong culture, but it isn't written anywhere. It's just how it's the unwritten ways that people behave towards each other and the way that decisions are made. So I think a lot of the PE firms are catching on to this and introducing roles that are focused on talent and development and putting a lot more thought into career paths and kind of being able to help people understand how they progress and put development around them. And so, and because they realize, right, that people are the most important asset in a PE business. We're not making anything. And the quality of the people that you can attract and retain is really what you're going to, it's really going to be the main influence on how successful you are.
Yeah. And I guess in your answer, you're suggesting that there's maybe been a change of attitude in this in recent years. Is that simply down to the consequences of the pandemic and everyone having to reassess, you know, life, work-life balance and aspects like that? Or is there something else around wider market conditions which are leading to firms having a greater focus?
I think it's partly just the maturity of the industry. You know, it's a kind of 30-year industry, maybe a bit longer, but a lot of the other industries have been doing this for longer. And a lot of the PE firms are quite small, so and are still run by the founders or run by, you know, the people who were early in their origination. And they haven't really seen anything else. So, you know, I think as they're progressing and becoming more sophisticated, it's becoming more and more critical. And they're realizing that some aren't, some kind of aren't focusing on it so much, but I think the ones that are will have a massive advantage.
Yeah. And I think even when you're talking about other aspects of operations, there's that piece, as you say, the industry being 20, 30 years old, it becoming a time when you're quite often seeing succession and change of leaders in a business. And I've had it said to me before, it's becoming a point where for the first time, things like firm level P&L or, you know, structure, or as you say, you know, culture are being assessed for the very first time, really. And interesting, you're saying it's often not written down anywhere, but at HG, have you tried to kind of define what the culture of the firm is and what was that process like?
Yeah, we did. So we did it through COVID, actually, because it became even more important while we were, you know, able to be with each other. We actually had a firm come in, a specialist kind of leadership firm, and do an assessment of our culture through interviewing people, doing focus groups, kind of, you know, gathering lots and lots of data. And then they assessed us against other PE firms. So what are the things that are important in our firm versus others? And against other tech firms, because we invest in techs. And actually what they showed was we are more akin to a tech firm in our culture than we are a PE firm. So things like we're results driven, we're really, really high, as you'd expect in anywhere in this industry. But also things like learning was really high, and care, which is probably quite unusual for a PE firm to have those as their kind of three pieces. But yeah, I think we do care, and we do put a lot of thought into this. We've also done a lot of work around articulating our values. So what are the things that are really important to us? And they'll differ by company. And then what we do as part of our recruitment is assess people based on those values. So we use psychometrics to kind of look at where people might lean in towards or not be demonstrating the values quite so much, and then have that as part of our process that we do when we're assessing people. Because these decisions are so important. You know, if you get them wrong, they can be very expensive in terms of time and in terms of energy that people have put into developing them, and in terms of cost. So yeah, we kind of weave those values into how we make decisions around recruitment, how we make decisions around promotions and development and progression.
But that's interesting. You're saying you did a lot of that work during COVID, and obviously a big consequence of that is a change in expectation, particularly from younger generations, in terms of how much they are keen to be in the office. And again, for the article, we spoke around this, right, where I think you said it's not explicit, but there is an expectation for people to be in the office. And the general sense that I get is that we're almost completely back across kind of the PE industry now to something that resembles requirements of attendance before the pandemic. And crucial to that is the apprenticeship model. I think you agree, right, that hasn't changed, and that actually dictates that you can't really get away from people needing to be in the office.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in these kinds of jobs, it is an apprenticeship model, right? You join, and the majority of the learning you will do will be on the job with people more senior than you, watching how they do things, listening, being pulled into meetings, being pulled onto calls, just sitting next to people and absorbing the way that they're operating. And that's very, very hard to do when you're at home looking at a laptop screen. I think there's some research coming through now from the grads who joined during COVID when they joined the banks. The thinking was actually they were quite a lot further behind where we would expect them to be had they been in the office. So that training that you develop in those early years is absolutely crucial. Now, of course, I think flexibility is really, really important, and post-pandemic has become essential, right? I worry about the firms that are mandating people coming back into the office 5 days a week. I worry that that will really impact their diversity, actually, because I think a lot of women are taking the load in terms of childcare in many cases, and that means they won't be able to go into the office 5 days a week. So I worry about that. But I think we, as I said, we consider ourselves to be a PE firm, but also kind of tech influenced. And a lot of the work that you do is on the road, right? You're out visiting companies, visiting businesses, working really deeply with the businesses. So you don't have to be in the office the whole time, but you need to be with your colleagues, learning and growing. We haven't mandated a minimum day in the office. I think I went to a session the other day with a lot of my peers across different PE firms, and the majority of firms have. And so some are mandating 5, 4, or 3. Some have different models for kind of front office and back office. So they'll expect all of their investment folks to be in 4 or 5 days, and maybe their operations teams 3 or 4 days. But the majority of firms are mandating something now. So I think it's definitely a direction of travel. What the flip side of that is that the senior folks need to be around to teach, right? So there's no point all of the juniors being around in the office if the senior folks aren't there to share their experience. So it's a double-edged piece. Both ends need commitment. But certainly I think the firms who are encouraging it will be more successful. One of the firms that I spoke to recently last week at that session, she said, we're mandating 5 days and we're actually selling it as a benefit. Because if you join us, you get exposure to leaders 5 days a week, manual learning 5 days a week as opposed to four or three. So they've flipped it actually and said you don't get flexibility, but what you get is development, which I thought was a really interesting take on it. But no, I think, you know, everyone needs elements of flexibility, and the industry hires grown-ups, and, you know, we treat people like grown-ups, and everyone behaves like grown-ups.
Yeah, and I guess that's talking around the importance of passing on those core and traditional skills onto younger generations. You invest in tech. How much are you implementing tech into your systems at the moment? And I guess we're talking about then a new range of skills where often it may be younger generations who may be able to teach the older generations.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, we invest in software across Europe and the US. So everybody loves software and technology, and we are pretty advanced with bringing a lot of that in-house as we do with our portfolio companies. So we've got our own product we've developed and we're using with the portfolio companies and internally. We've had ChatGPT for a good year or so. We're now rolling out Microsoft Copilot across the firm, which has been interesting. There aren't many providers in the market helping you do that because it's so new. So, you know, finding people who can train us how to use it is pretty impossible. We're kind of having to do it ourselves. And then obviously there are tools, you know, deep research tools where a few years ago you would have analysts and associates researching companies on the internet. Now that can be done in a matter of seconds, right? You type in an industry and a competitors of this organization, and that data is there immediately, probably too much of it. So the skill is then in kind of filtering through and figuring out what's valuable versus not. But certainly, and across all the ops teams, obviously, who would be relevant in this podcast, you know, the automation, the offshoring, the nearshoring, the, you know, using all the technology that's available, I think is changing everybody's roles. In terms of from the people perspective, I've got a meeting tomorrow actually with our head of compliance around how do we put some guardrails around it. So, you know, what meetings are we able to record and send out a transcript immediately, which is what Copilot will do, versus meetings that we want to maintain confidentiality for good reason. And so thinking about the kind of the ethics of it and how it will impact how people work is a really important piece. And in speaking to my peers, lots of us are putting together policies around how this tech should be used and how it shouldn't be used and when it shouldn't be used. But ignoring it and pretending it's not there is absolutely the worst thing to do. You've got to embrace it and lean into it and figure out a way of it helping people, enable them to do their jobs better.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're talking around the skills element there. We talked around culture and expectations in the office. I mean, traditionally, the biggest carrot for going into the PE industry has been the level of pay, and particularly the offer of carried interest. How fundamental do you think that is to your firm's role in attracting talent? And then more generally, you know, and again, you said in the article that you think kind of culture is top and pay comes some way down on that. But, you know, you see across the industry there has people talk about this war on talent or whatever, a war for talent rather. You've seen greater distribution of carry across more junior members of the team. And does that reflect your experience? And is it seen as a pretty important tool for getting the younger generation through the door?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the industry is known, right, for being financially rewarding, and people who are attracted to that will be drawn to it. Again, it's linked to culture. If you're a culture that values meritocracy, you know, fairness, people being rewarded for the contribution they've made, then you'll distribute your carry further down into the organization and you'll distribute more of it. If you're not, and you value status and tenure and, you know, the belief that the few at the top should be getting the majority of the carry, then that will lead to a different reward model. We're very much at the first end, so very much about meritocracy, sharing, making people feel like they've got some skin in the game early. So we give carry right down to the kind of juniors as they're joining the firm on the deal side, and then we distribute it pretty well within the rest of the firm. That's the other piece. You know, some of my peers don't give carry to specific parts of the business. So it depends. You know, if you're a public company and you can give shares to kind of build that sense of ownership, that's a different model. You really have to develop the model that you want to encourage the behavior that you think is most important, which again, it all leads back to culture being critical. So yeah, I think there's always the other part of the circle is, what are your competitors doing? And how do you make sure that what you're offering will attract and retain the best quality talent? So there's a constant eye on what's going on in the market, and we all do the same thing. You know, what's happening, and obviously then geographic differences around carry models, European versus US, and how to manage those changes as you're expanding into different regions that would have different expectations. So it's a pretty complex area, but fascinating. And there are different levers to pull to make sure that you're getting what you want out of it. But yeah, money and carry will always be really important to this industry, I think.
Okay, just to wrap up, where do you see the market at the moment in terms of attracting talent?
Yeah, so I think we've obviously gone through a real change in the market, right? It was a real fight for talent a few years ago. And I think all the firms were hiring hard. We hired, I think it was in 2022, we were about 250 people. We hired 30 brand new associates to join. We've now obviously tempered that. We're now about 400 people. We've hired 12 this year, or we're hiring 12, because it's important to keep the kind of the funnel of talent joining at the bottom and making their way through. So it feels a little bit more like a buyer's market at the moment than it does a seller's. But it's very competitive still. You know, we hire from the banks and from the consulting firms, as the majority of PE firms do. Most of them don't have a direct graduate program. So you're at the mercy of who the banks and the consultancies have hired. And if diversity is something that you're really focused on, which it should be, and you're aiming to hire a 50-50 male-female cohort at the associate level, guess what? Those diverse candidates are even hotter property, and you need to make sure your culture and your reward and all the things you've talked about are even, you know, more attractive for folks. So yeah, I think it will always be PE, I think, will always attract really high quality talent, but they have lots of options. So, you know, it's something that we never take our eye off the ball or get complacent with. The market, I think, will also shake out a lot of things. So some firms just aren't performing as well, right? They're struggling to fundraise. They're not performing as well with the portfolios that they own. Some of those folks are approaching us as opposed to us approaching them to say, look, would you be open to a conversation? Which we haven't had for a while. So yes, there's the industry, but also there's firms within the industry. So some are losing talent pretty heavily, and others are benefiting from that. So there's a bit more movement really than I think you would typically have when everybody's doing really well and kind of sticking in the seats that they've got. So yeah, it changes over time, but it's always something that you need to stay really, really focused on.
It was great to hear from Kerry there. There was a couple of things I wanted to pick up with both of you before we close out the podcast based on that conversation. What are your thoughts on this idea around the traditional apprenticeship model in private equity? As Kerry says, most of her peers now at other GPs are looking to mandate 4 or 5 days back in the office, particularly for front office staff, people in the investment team. So do we think that, at least in this industry, flexibility is going to be increasingly become something of a thing of the past?
That is a really good question. So I know anecdotally from friends of mine who also work in white collar, granted not in PE, but in sort of investment banking and across law, they will outright reject a job offer if there is a mandated sort of 4 to 5 days per week in the office. So I can't speak for private equity, I think, specifically, but I do think, sort of drawing from other conversations that I have, that culture in this industry is very much, for one, set at the top, and for two, it is very much a career destination. People work in private equity because they want to work in private equity. It's not sort of that they all want 4 to 5 days back in the office, then that is going to be strongly normalized. Because people want to work in private equity, they will not break over being in the office 5 days a week. We used to do that before 2020 in this industry and in most other industries. I think if we combine those two elements, then it can be the standard again.
Yeah, and I think something that was interesting, it was a main thrust of the feature piece, was that it doesn't seem like an immediate problem. And actually, people who've chosen to go into private equity are coming from backgrounds where you already have long hours, a lot of pressure and expectation to be going above and beyond, you know, maybe contracted hours. But the problem may be a longer term problem, in that people are choosing less to go into banking and consulting because of those issues and the issues that you mentioned, you know, more broadly across kind of white collar industries. They might choose to work for startups or tech companies instead. And then that's the pool that private equity traditionally taps into for its talent. So there's something for the industry to think about whether that pool of talent is going to be diminished in the future. Once people are working in financial services, the appeal of working on the buy side rather than the sell side is always going to be quite appealing. But it's just about the volume and the quality of talent still going into financial services at the entry level, which I think is something that private equity needs to think about. Sylvia, I don't know if you've got any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I just think the only thing I'll add is I think flexible working is of value to younger people just because of the, well, flexibility it affords. And I think it can make you more productive depending on what work you're doing in which setting. I think that, yes, there does seem to be a push to get people back into the office as we move further and further away from the impacts of COVID-19. But maybe there's an argument to say that you need to be in the office more often when you're newer and you're learning, and you need to be learning from your peers more. But then you can foster that trust later on in your career, or maybe after a few, I don't know, weeks, months or years in the job, whatever that is. But I think perhaps this can be an agreement made between the manager and the employee rather than something that a firm has to make. What I'm trying to say is maybe it's not something that it has to be part of the firm's culture, and it can be up to the discretion of each team what works well for the individual. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's key, right, is getting that balance between flexibility and expectations, right? And in fairness, that's what Kerry was saying, is the policy at HG is that there's an expectation, but there is an allowance for flexibility when it's requested. Maybe that's the most sensible approach going forward. We're of course seeing tension around the return to office across all white collar industries right now, but we will continue to keep a close eye on it in PE specifically, and anybody interested to see maybe in 6 months and a year whether there is an even more forceful push to get people back into the office. Right, guys, before we outstay our welcome, please can you both give a little teaser of what you're both working on at the moment?
Yep. On the other end of the talent pipeline, I'm working on a story about succession planning and how it's linked to fundraising. So I'm exploring what makes a good succession plan, how to communicate this well to LPs, and perhaps most interestingly, how to get a good capitalization structure to ensure that all potential stakeholders are happy.
Slightly adjacent to the whole talent topic, I should definitely mention that I'm working on the Drawdown's next big topic that we're tackling, which is the narrative around DEI in private equity, which seems to kind of commonly be attributed to that LPs are the driving force behind it. I've looked on year-on-year reports and the numbers aren't changing that much. So I want to find out what is happening there exactly. Are LPs really the driving force behind it? And if so, where are kind of the obstacles in everyone's way that prevent the industry from becoming more inclusive, and what can be done around that?
Right. We'll be back for another episode of Top of the Op shortly, where we'll be trying to cut through the hype of AI to work out what if any tools are successfully being implemented in the industry right now. That just leads me to say a huge thank you to the Drawdown's premier strike force, Sylvia and Matthias. Thank you both.
Thank you.
I still don't quite understand the reference, but thank you anyways, John.
Thank you both, and thank you to everyone listening. See you again next time.